And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us. When Debbie Mitchell was a girl, she felt uncomfortable with who she was. It took her until the age of 20 to decide that she could come out of the closet, so to speak, as an agnostic. For years, she kept quiet about what she truly thought about God for the benefit of her friends, her community, and her parents. Being an adult agnostic or atheist in America today is no longer the most challenging of circumstances. Secularism is continually on the rise, with belief in God down 8% in the past 8 years, according to a Harris poll. But it was when Debbie had her first son and was living in North Texas that she had to revisit this struggle all over again. She began by going back to the church and reliving what she considered the lie of being a believer. Out of fear that her son would one day realize that she was a non-believer and had been raising him Catholic merely to appease him, she decided to go another route and to be honest with him about her non-belief. In doing this, she found little support out there in society, on the internet, or on the bookshelves, which led her to create a blog called Kids Without Religion. The blog attracted people from all over the country, desperate for answers on how to raise moral and intelligent children without religion, and how best to explain religion and faith to their kids. Her post on CNN.com entitled, "Why I Raise My Children Without God," became the most viewed citizen report on the site. She's now out with a book, Growing Up Godless, A Parent's Guide to Raising Kids Without Religion, from the Sterling Ethos imprint. She joins us today on Midday as we take a look at the unique set of challenges that face parents who do not believe in God. We're also going to be joined during the show by another prominent voice on this topic, Dale McGowan, who provided the foreword for Debbie's book. Dale McGowan is the editor and co-author of Parenting Beyond Belief, as well as Raising Free Thinkers, two compilations of essays from atheist parents. They are considered the first books to be published on the topic. Dale McGowan also blogs about non-religious parenting at parentingbeyondbelief.com. He tours the country conducting non-religious parenting seminars. He'll be joining us in a few minutes. We start now, though, with Debbie Mitchell, author of Growing Up Godless, A Parent's Guide to Raising Kids Without Religion. Debbie, thank you very much for being with us on Midday.
Hi, Dan. Thank you for inviting me.
You know, I have to start with a sort of fundamental question that occurs to me as I was reading about you and reading your writings. If you're an atheist, if you're raising your son as an atheist, why is there a question about this, about how you raise your son? Why is there even a question? If you're an atheist and you don't believe in God, why do you even introduce the subject?
Well, I think it's difficult for kids who are immersed in a very religious society because there's a lot of pressure from their peers and from family members who believe, and from even sometimes from teachers. So they do have to be introduced to religion and taught how to navigate the world that thinks very differently than they do.
And was that particularly true in Texas where you lived?
Yes, definitely.
Well, tell us about your own odyssey on this, and then we'll talk some more about raising children without God. You were raised a Catholic?
That is correct. I went through all the rituals of Catholicism. I was confirmed, and I was, you know, brought up by my mother to believe as a Catholic. And it wasn't until I left for college that I actually had started to have some doubts. And I, for example, took a class, and there was an instructor that really got me to thinking about the whole topic of religion. And then one time I was driving on my way to school, and I heard this awful, awful story about a child who had been raped and sodomized. And I just thought, this is not the God that I was taught to believe in. So from that point forward, everything started to unravel, and I started losing my faith, not only in the religion that I was brought up in, but also in the God that I was taught to believe in.
Hmm. When you were growing up a Catholic, were you bored with the church, with the ceremony, the rituals of the church, or did it interest you at all? Because, you know, a lot of kids struggle with that when they're young. They're just sort of bored by the whole thing and don't know what to make of it.
That's definitely true. I think most kids are bored at church. You know, you have to sit still and you have to sit and listen to adults drone on and on and on. And really, I didn't find church interesting at all. And until I went away to college and I took a few courses on the history of religion, and then it became very fascinating to me as a topic of study, actually.
It did become fascinating to you for a time. Do you find these questions about a merciful God and whether there is a God, do you find those questions at all interesting?
I do. I think the topic is interesting. I like to read. I read both sides. I read believers and their views and non-believers and their views. And I think it's interesting how people come to their understanding. And I think it's interesting how they justify things that don't mesh with the God that they're taught.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's definitely interesting psychological study.
Have you found over time that when people in your company learn that you're an atheist, want to convert you, want to, you know, try to sell you on it again?
I definitely think that that was true, particularly 10 years ago. It seems to be happening less often now, but I will say that the Mormons must have an X on my house because I get a visit from them about once a week. So, but yeah, I do think that people tend to want you to believe the same as they do because there is some comfort in knowing that other people believe as you do. There's validation there. And so especially, you know, family members, of course, who are worried about my soul and what's going to happen to me after I die, they want me to believe as they do because they believe we're all going to heaven, and I understand that.
It's interesting that you mention Mormons. I think the Mormon Church is the fastest growing organized church in the United States, according to surveys I see. But also growing right along with it is secularism. People who just don't believe in any particular organized church, don't believe in God in general. What do you make of that? What is happening there? Why do you think that's happening?
Well, I think the Mormons, you know, they have large families and they have very strong social structures. So I think they also tend to have fewer people who leave their religion. I noticed that there's a lot of Catholics that reach out to me on my blog or a lot of former Catholics. As for the large number of nuns that are surfacing, seems to be that people are starting to come forward and saying the conservative religious movement doesn't speak for me. And a lot of those people, while they don't consider themselves atheists, they do consider themselves spiritual. So they really haven't given up their belief completely,
mm-hmm.
but they're in that sort of in-between space where they don't follow a particular religion or a certain dogma. They've kind of made up their own boutique spirituality, but they don't declare themselves as atheists either.
You made a reference there to the large number of nons. That was N-O-N-S, right? Non-believers?
N-O-N-E-S, the nuns.
The nons.
Mm-hmm.
N-O-N-E-S?
Correct.
The nuns.
The nuns.
Okay. Not to be confused with the large number of N-U-N-S, large number
Correct.
Of nuns. Okay, so no confusion
there.
Sorry
about
there.
My accent
No,
there.
That's okay, Debbie. Deborah Mitchell, our guest, Growing Up Godless, A Parent's Guide to Raising Kids Without Religion. Now, back to my original question then. Why do you need a guide? You need a guide because kids come home with questions. Is that it? Kids want to know, is there a heaven? Is there a hell? Is there a God?
Well, I think they come home with those questions because they hear other children talking about that at school. And it certainly is easier as parents to say, to come up with these pat answers that say, there's somebody watching out for you. After you die, you're going to be transported to heaven. I mean, these are all easy, comforting answers. They're coping mechanisms. And I certainly understand why people tell this to their children. But I don't think you need a God. I think that you can raise children who are moral and kind and hopeful. I mean, a lot of people think because you don't raise your kids with religion that they won't have any hope. I just don't find that true at all. I think that you can still raise children who are very positive and embrace life just as any Christian would. So I don't think you need God at all.
It's very interesting. It does raise this question about you talk about morals, sound morals, good ethics. How much of that comes from spiritual teaching, actually? Think about it, folks. How much of what we consider right versus wrong, how we make that judgment, actually comes from spiritual teaching, comes from the lessons of the Old Testament, the New Testament? Some would say it all does, that that's the basis of all understanding of what's ethical and moral. Others would say, no, we've made those decisions in other ways. We've reached conclusions about what's right and wrong in other ways. What do you say to that?
First of all, I mean, our dogs have learned morality in the same way people have. If they want food, they won't bite the hand that feeds them. They protect their tribe. So I think that morality doesn't come at all from religion, though religion certainly can provide a moral structure. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that it's a social construct that we learn first and best from our parents. We must teach our children self-awareness, reflection, and empathy. And they have to understand that their actions and words can harm others, both physically and emotionally. So I think that's where our morality comes from.
I want to ask you a question as a former Catholic. Do you ever feel like you're depriving your son of some of the rituals and traditions you grew up with? That, you know, aside from the belief in God, that there are elements of belonging to an organized church, a community of people who, have a general belief in something, or for some people, very specific beliefs, but generally being part of a community, taking part in rituals associated with holidays, things of that nature. I'm just looking at it, you know, in terms of family tradition. Is there any part of that that you think maybe you should have allowed your son to be exposed to?
Well, that's a good question, and I get asked that a lot on the blog. I mean, there's certainly experiences that our children won't participate in because they're not affiliated with religion, such as going to church and the rituals of baptism and confirmation and prayer. But I don't think our kids miss out. I think what they usually remember about religious ceremonies, at least for me growing up, is the time that you spend with your family and the rituals created through celebrations, through doing the same things over and over again. And we can still have these experiences with our kids. We simply put them in another context. We can have Sunday morning rituals of making a big breakfast and then going for walks or playing games. And on Christmas, we can do similar things. We can, you know, volunteer at soup kitchens or bake for friends. The rituals that we do over and over again that bring comfort and security to kids, and the things that they'll remember.
It sounds to me, Debbie, from your writings, that you just didn't want to lie to your son, that you had come to a conclusion in life about God, and you didn't want to pretend or lie to him about this. And I wonder, just at what age was he when you decided you could have these conversations?
So I told him, I started telling him what I believed around 4 to 5 years of age. He was in a religious preschool, and I kept him there because I felt like it was a good program. He went to a religious kindergarten program, and we would just talk about what he was learning and experiencing when he came home. And I would tell him, not forcing it on him, but just telling him my views when he asked. But mainly, the biggest thing that I did was I asked him a lot what he thought. And I asked him, you know, do these things make sense to you? Do you see this in the world around you today? And so really I put it on him to look around and try to find the answers.
Debbie Mitchell is our guest in this hour of Midday, author of Growing Up Godless, A Parent's Guide to Raising Kids Without Religion. We're discussing raising children in a non-religious household. Debbie writes about that on her blog and in this new book. We're going to take a break on Midday. When we get back, Dale McGowan will be joining us. He wrote the foreword to the book by Debbie, and he is the author of Parenting Beyond Belief, Raising Three Free Thinkers, and has written and talked a lot about this. So he'll be joining us as well. And you can join us on Midday. Here's the number to call, 410-662-8780. Toll-free long distance, good from anywhere in the country, 866-661-9309. The Midday email address, midday@wypr.org. go on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. There's already several comments there on this topic, and feel free to post one of yourself. Some comments from Facebook. I want to share these, and Debbie Mitchell and Dale McGowan will be joining us. Just listen in and then feel free to comment. Here's one from Paula. She says, I was raised with no religion. Funny thing is, last week someone told me I was the most Christian acting person they know. Also, I've been told I have a Messiah complex because I'm always trying to save people. I try to be a good person without the promise of heaven or the fear of hell. Be good for goodness sakes. Molly says, my child has more compassion and moral conscience than her peers, based on my observations, without having any religion or deity. I find the suspicion and downright belligerence toward non-theists in this country to be appalling. Freedom of religion also means freedom from religion. Sherry, a different view. Sherry says, I believe that you should expose your children to organized religion and teach them about God and about the power of prayer. Then, when they have a conflict in their hearts or minds, they can turn to God instead of drugs, suicide, alcohol, etc. As a parent, you are naive if you think you will be the person they turn to about peer pressure. Weren't you a teenager once? I feel we have an obligation to at least expose them to a possibility of a higher being. They can later decide whether it will fit into their lives as adults. So let me bring Dale into this, Dale, and say welcome, Dale McGowan, to Midday, author of Parenting Beyond Belief. And Dale wrote the foreword for Debbie's book, Growing Up Godless, which is new. Dale McGowan, welcome to Midday on WYPR.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Let me ask you both a question off of these comments. The one from Molly, she says, I find the suspicion and downright belligerence toward non-theists in this country to be appalling. Now, we made the comment in our opening that maybe it isn't so bad these days because, you know, people aren't as harsh in their judgment about atheists or agnostics as they used to be, and there's growing secularism. Dale, let me hear from you on that, and then I'd like to get Debbie's comments.
Well, it really is changing, and that's understandable. Not only is the voice and the profile of secular and non-religious people growing, but I think a lot more people know someone personally who is non-religious than was true a generation or two ago. So it's definitely the case that people still encounter prejudice. They still encounter sort of dark assumptions, but it is definitely changing. You can feel a sea change in the culture that a lot of people are better able to come out and be honest about being non-religious now than they have been in the past.
And Debbie, what about the view from North Texas?
Right, I definitely think it matters where you live. If you live in New York City, obviously you're exposed to a lot of different people and cultures and religions and beliefs. So some place like that is going to be a lot more open-minded versus a little town in North Texas or West Texas where the majority of people are Christians and they haven't been exposed to a lot of people who are different than they are.
Dale, I asked Debbie this question, so if you don't mind, I'm curious about your own personal journey on this, becoming an atheist, and then, becoming a parent and having to deal with this. Please tell us about your experiences.
Sure. I was raised in what I've called a nominally Christian home. We went to church on Sundays, United Church of Christ, so I had exposure to these ideas. But there was never any particular pressure on us to declare something or to believe something in particular, and we were encouraged, my brothers and I, were encouraged to really ask the questions and to seek our own answers, which I think was a terrific gift that we got from our parents. And I was always fascinated by the questions. You asked earlier, I think you asked Debbie if she was interested in the questions, and I would say that I definitely was as well, all the way through. All religions, all myth systems, you know, Greek and Roman myths when I was a kid, those questions I just think are the most interesting ones you can ask. And so I understand the religious impulse entirely to try to get answers to these compelling questions. And it was actually an interest in those questions, a deep engagement that led me to really ask them in a serious way and to spend a large part of my life exploring these questions and ultimately coming to the conclusion that I think religion is an attempt to answer those questions, but I don't think it's based on a reality. I don't think a God exists. So as I became a parent, one of the first questions I had to encounter was, okay, I'm an atheist, but am I raising my children as atheists? Am I actually raising them to believe as I do? And I decided ultimately that I was definitely not doing that, that the most important thing to me about my own worldview is that I came to it independently, that I was actually able to explore these questions without feeling that I was having something dictated to me. And so I wanted to give my kids that same gift, expose them to a whole range of ideas. Like Debbie, my kids, like Debbie's kids, mine went to a religious preschool. And so they had that early exposure to those ideas. And all the way through, we've occasionally gone to church in a couple of different denominations. They've had that exposure. And they also hear in, you know, straightforwardly what it is that I believe. But I always say, I want you to seek out other people who believe different things, and then you get to make up your own mind in the long run.
And Debbie Mitchell, you support the study of comparative religions in school.
Oh, absolutely. I think it helps our children to know what other people believe and to help them become more tolerant, and also so they can converse with others. I mean, it's definitely a good thing to expose them to all sorts of world religions and belief systems. And I think it's good for Christian kids and atheist kids. It doesn't matter, Hindus, Muslims.
Let me read an email from one of our listeners, Shirley, and then we'll go to the phone lines and welcome our listeners into this conversation at 410-662-8780. We're speaking with Deborah Mitchell, author of Growing Up Godless, A Parent's Guide to Raising Kids Without Religion. The imprint is Sterling Ethos as a publisher. And Dale McGowan joining us, who wrote the foreword for Debbie's book, author of an earlier book on this subject, Parenting Beyond Belief. Shirley's comments from Arbutus, Maryland: I am astounded that you suggested in your introduction that it is a struggle to teach kids morality and ethics in an atheist household. These issues have nothing to do with God. They have to do with the manner in which you treat other people. Do religious people only act morally in order to please God, follow doctrine, or get into heaven? Not because they think it's right to treat others ethically? I have to think that even if everyone were atheist, they would still be good people. Let's go to the phone lines and welcome Tony from Baltimore to Midday. Hi, Tony. Please turn down your radio and go right ahead with your comments. Tony, you there?
Yeah, I sure am. How you doing?
Yeah, go right ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm always confused with atheists.
We lost Tony. Why do atheists observe moral rules at all if they don't believe in God? No judgment, no rules. That's just what I got from my screener. Why do atheists observe moral rules at all if they don't believe in God? This goes back to this question, Dale and Debbie, you want to take it. How much of our instruction in life for doing the right thing comes from spiritual teaching, actually comes from Scripture?
Well, it's very interesting that the question's always posed as if we don't know the answer. And the fact is there's been a tremendous amount of excellent moral development research done throughout the 20th century, and we know where moral development comes from. We know that the basis of moral development and ethical understanding is in early experience. It's in a child's, from the very beginning, as early as 18 months, actually even earlier than 18 months, some studies are showing now, empathy for the mother is one of the first roots of moral behavior that shows up. When children at age 3 and 4 and 5 begin having peer interactions, they have an opportunity to be treated fairly and unfairly, and they begin developing the ability to see what it feels like to treat others as you would like to be treated, for example, and to be fair and unfair, and to see reflected in the other person's eyes how they feel about the way you're treating them. So it's those early experiences that lead to a moral understanding, a moral sense. These are things that we actually can say with a great deal of confidence, but we persist in the idea that somehow it's taught through texts or it's taught through parables. Those are reflections and reinforcements of the things that we actually learn through experience.
Here's a comment along these lines from Erica in Catonsville, brought to us by email. She says, I have been asked, how do you know what is right or wrong without religion? There are some basic values that stretch through all of humanity regardless of race and religion. Do not lie, do not kill, do not hurt, be considerate and polite. If anything, my children will have to be more intelligent because they have to think through the consequences of their decisions rather than blindly following a religion that dictates what they do. Let's go to another call. Rick in Frederick, thank you for calling. Go right ahead, please.
Hi, Dan. My wife is Catholic, and I was raised Presbyterian, but it never quite took, so I guess I call myself an atheist. And oddly enough, I'm the one who brings them to church on a regular basis. My wife, being Catholic, doesn't bother to go to church. She's sure of a place, apparently. And but I bring them for several reasons. One is that, you know, when they're very young, it's kind of a moral training wheels. It's the Santa Claus version of why we should be moral people. And later on, you know, we've discussed, you know, why as members of society in a larger group, more of a kind of a Greek ideal reason why we should be good, kind of what you were talking about earlier. Second reason why we do this is because of cultural literacy. All the great art and music and references within Harry Potter and all these things have Judeo-Christian origins, and I want my kids to be able to understand references and understand the knowledge base. And the last reason why I bring them to church, even though I'm not a believer, is that it's anecdotally, in my experience, when people have had difficult times and they have no religion, if they find religion, they go off the deep end. They become, you know, really true believers, and I want to inoculate them against that to a certain extent. But at the same time, people who are religious, and I wouldn't mind my kids if they became religious, it wouldn't bother me at all. They move back to their religion. They cleave to the hope that of an afterlife, things that give them some support. And then they kind of rebalance themselves again, and things, and they find it useful. So for all those reasons, even though I'm like I said, I'm not a believer, I value the role of faith in the lives of my kids.
Rick, thank you very much. Any comment from Dale or Deborah on that?
Well, I certainly understand why
he would want to
bring his children to church. It does provide structure to teach children. You know, it's a certain set of beliefs and morality, but you don't need church or religion to teach morality. Again, as Dale said, I mean, it comes from empathy and from teaching self-awareness and reflection. But the caller did have a good point about exposing your children to religion so that they wouldn't see it as something more glamorous or enticing than it really is. Exposing kids to religion does help them realize what it is, and encouraging them to think about it and to ask questions and even go attend church sometimes helps them come up with their own views and their own beliefs. And this way they're not as likely to become fanatical about a religion.
Well, let me ask you a question, Debbie. Push back a little bit there. Do you as an atheist point to problems in our society that you attribute to, you know, extreme religious belief, and point to your son and say, "See, this is what extreme religious belief causes. This is what belief in God causes. It actually leads to problems."
Well, I certainly point out contradictions in religion and what it's supposed to teach and what actually people do. But I don't think religion causes wars. I think people cause wars. Religion just happens to be this belief system that people use either as a crutch or a coping mechanism. And I certainly understand why people want to raise their kids within religion, but it is not for me and not for my family. But
okay. Dale, did you have any further comment?
Well, just exactly what Debbie said, I think is correct. It's you want kids to be exposed to what's going on in the world. You want to be able to express your own opinion. I think that's a valuable thing for them. But I try to always balance it. You know, so I will, you know, if we're talking about 9/11, you can't talk about 9/11 without recognizing the religious component of that violent act. But at the same time, you can't talk about Martin Luther King Jr. without recognizing that his religion was an important part of who he was and how he actuated his moral understandings. So we just in every time my kids come to me with a religious question, or every time I'm expressing something, you know, when my daughter came to me and said, "Dad, did Jesus really come alive after he died?" That was a question she asked at one point. And I said, "Well, I don't think he did. I think that is a story that's supposed to make us feel better about death. But I know that Grandma Barbara thinks he did, and I think you should talk to her, find out what she says, and then you get to make up your own mind." So it's really, you don't have to hide your own perspective, but you have to continually open the door and present the invitation to go seek out other points of view.
I appreciate that. I wonder, do you provide the historical Jesus answer when someone asks you, well, who was Jesus? Was he the Son of God? Was he the Savior of man? What do you say?
Well, I always start with, I think that, and then I'll say why I think that if we're getting into that depth. But yes, historical Jesus is basically the what my position is, that this is Jesus is a teacher. He's someone who, like Gautama Buddha, like other founders of a religion, was most likely a person who, after his death, was sort of elevated to godhood. This is there's even a name for this. It's called euhemerism. You know, this idea of exalting humans into godlike status after their death. But then I always move on to say, other people believe differently, and I want you to make up your own mind.
Let's take another call. Avril in Baltimore, thank you for calling Midday. You're on with Deborah Mitchell and Dale McGowan.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Oh, I am so pleased to hear a show like yours, because since I was 8 years old, I was struggling with religion. I was born in South America, the former British colony in South America. And I had always been asking questions of my ministers and all this stuff. And as a child, I just couldn't get this. I was raised a Christian. This Jesus thing and dying for your sins, and you don't take responsibility for nothing wrong that you do. I am just so happy to have a show like this and to realize that it's okay for me to think outside of the box as far as religion is concerned, and God and everything else.
Is that why you called, Avril? I'm glad you're enjoying the show then and getting something out of it. Thank you.
Oh, yes. I'm glad for people like your guests, that it just helps me to say it's okay to think this way and that the world is not going to end tomorrow because you do.
Thank you, Avril. Before we go, there was a Facebook comment I read earlier to Deborah and Dale and to everyone from Sherry saying that I believe you should expose your children to organized religion early and teach them about the power of prayer in particular, so that when they have a conflict in their hearts or minds, they can turn to God instead of drugs, suicide, and alcohol. And I guess as atheists or agnostic, you wouldn't say turn to God. You would say, what would you say? But what about that? What about that as an element, a tool to give children growing up, this idea of prayer? Some people might call it meditation. Some people may call it, well, prayer is unique in what it stands for, I think. But anyway, I'd like to get your comments about that. Dale, go to you. Go to Dale and then Deborah.
Sure. Again, my kids always know that is there for them to explore the idea of prayer. Mm-hmm. My assumption is that they have prayed. You know, when they were in a Christian preschool, I can practically guarantee that they prayed. I prayed when I was young just to see what it felt like. I thought, this is interesting. I wonder if there's something to this. But ultimately, what I think I want my kids to know for a fact is that there are other comforts, there is other support to be gained from people, that the support of a loving community and a loving family is what many people end up attributing to God. I remember reading a story. I was so struck years ago when I read about a woman who had lost her husband, and all the people of her church came together, and they fixed meals for her, and they stayed with her, and they comforted her. It was a wonderful story. And then she said that in the attention and the love and the care of this community, she could feel the loving touch of God. And I thought, that's absolutely perfect, except we don't actually need to extend it and credit it to God. The community itself is what came together and supported her and encouraged her. And that's what I want my children to know, that they will always be able to count on me. They'll always be able to count on my wife, on their siblings, on the community around them, on the people that they bring into their circle.
Anything to add there, Debbie?
I never encourage my children to pray and to seek answers from an invisible deity outside themselves. I taught them to reflect inward or meditate or reach out to mom or dad or a friend or somebody that they trust, like Dale suggested. And I just didn't feel that there was any value in teaching them prayer, because it teaches them that somebody else is going to fix their problems. And so I really wanted them to try to work on looking inward.
410-662-8780 is the number for midday. If you'd like to join our conversation with Deborah Mitchell, author of Growing Up Godless, she blogs about raising children without religion. And Dale McGowan, who wrote the foreword for Deborah's book, is also joining us today. He's the author of an earlier book on this subject, Parenting Beyond Belief. 410-662-8780, toll-free long-distance, 866-661-9309. You can send me an email, and I'll read it on the air with your comments, midday at wypr.org. Dan Rodericks here on WYPR. We'll be right back. Really interesting comments coming in by email and some questions for our guests. Here's another comment, this one from Chris. It says, I am an atheist, but my 12-year-old son and 9-year-old daughter believe in God and identify as Christians. What does that mean in our household? It means that I'm happy to help them explore what that means without hiding my own beliefs or why I think what I do. My goal as a parent is for my children to think critically and make their own spiritual choices. You know, I've often heard it said, give children a little taste of religion growing up so that they have it, and then later on as adults they can make up their mind about whether they want to pursue it or not. And then there's just the opposite. Children are too young to understand these things. Don't brainwash them. Don't push this on to them. Have the conversation when they're in their 20s. Sit at the kitchen table and talk about openly about religion and what it could mean in your life, what it's meant for you as a parent growing up. Wait until they're young adults to have this conversation. What do you think about that, Deborah?
I agree. I think that you need to wait till they're a little older before you start having the conversation with them. I think to present God as true when they're very young is indoctrinating them. It's the same thing we do with the myth of Santa Claus. And I think that in order to be truly fair, we need to wait until they're maybe 8, 9, 10 years old before we start discussing, what religion is. Certainly, if they have questions for us, if their kids ask them at school, you can talk to them about God earlier. But if you're bringing them up without religion in your household, then that would be my approach. But I do think that Chris is also doing what is best for his family, and that is he's allowing his children to choose, and he is being there and presenting them with an alternative view.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Deborah, as a former Catholic, a question for you. This one from Ken by email. I am an atheist, and my wife shares similar views. We both grew up Catholic, and we still celebrate Christmas. We are considering starting a family of our own soon, and my question is, what do you do about Christmas? We still enjoy the holiday. I'm curious how other atheists handle Christmas. My guess is that many don't just ditch the holiday altogether.
Absolutely not. Christmas and Easter are also both secular as holidays as well as religious holy days, and so we just celebrate the secular holiday. And many Christians celebrate both, so I would still enjoy those holidays. It's fun. They're rituals you create with your children, and the same for Easter.
David in Baltimore, let's take another call. David, you'll be joining Deborah Mitchell, author of Growing Up Godless, and as well as Dale McGowan, author of Parenting Beyond Belief. David, welcome to the show.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question, but I'd like to preface it with a brief comment. I myself was raised Roman Catholic, and unlike many lapsed Catholics, I don't have any issues with the church. My epiphany about God came through my dog, actually, when I took him to the vet. Very sick, thought he would have to be put down, and the vet was able to figure out what was wrong and fix him, and I explained to the dog that everything was going to be all right, and it hit me all of a sudden that my relationship to God, whatever that is kind of like the dog's relationship to the vet. Like, there's no way I can understand the enormity of God, whatever that might be, but I just accept that maybe that's out there, and I should just, have faith and go through life and be a good person. And my question is to the guests, I find when I try to explain this to my devout friends that I'm met either at the best with pity and at the worst with scorn. And I don't understand that. I feel like the religious have a very hard time accepting the unreligious, but not the other way around. And I'm wondering if they find that as well.
Dale, go right ahead.
Well, I think it varies a great deal. The non-religious vary wildly in their attitudes toward religion, and I think a lot of it has to do with personal history. If you have someone who feels like who had a difficult separation from religion, who feels that they were abused, even psychologically and emotionally as a child, or feels that they were lied to or betrayed, if they have any of that sort of anger toward religion, it's very difficult to let go of, and a lot of times people will never be able to see anything good about a religious person or a religious institution or tradition. Really, the majority of people who are non-religious didn't have that kind of separation experience, and so they have more of a spectrum of attitudes toward it. There's actually a study that came out of the University of Tennessee last year that looked at the different types of non-belief, and there's about 1 in 8 non-believers are what are called ritual atheists, who find religious rituals and traditions to be very beautiful, and they practice those and pursue those. So there are a lot of different expressions of it, and I think it's true of religious people as well. I actually know a lot of religious people who really have no problem with the non-religious. But those who are dogmatic, who are doctrinaire, who are on the more conservative side, find it very threatening and tend to get very flustered when they're even talking about it. So it really is a wide spectrum.
Let's take another call. Lauren, hello. You're on Midday. Go right ahead.
Hi, Dan. I have several comments and questions now, having listened to your very interesting speaker.
We have limited time. You have a really good question, according to my screener.
I was curious initially about an earlier discussion that your guests were speaking about how in times of crisis and loss, the church community was very, very helpful and supportive, and I'm wondering where your guests find that support without the church community.
At being atheists. I'm glad you asked that question. Thank you, Lauren. go right ahead with the time that we have. Deborah and Dale, I'd like to hear from you on that.
I certainly still have a lot of friends who are religious, by the way, and they're a part of my community of friends. So when something bad happens, we come together in the same way that a religious community would. My friends, family, and those that I know who are religious still come in and help me cope when I lost my father in the same way that anybody would help a member of their church.
Okay. And Dale, how about you?
Yes, very similar answer. It's we have to find those communities and build those communities for ourselves as we go through life. And many times it'll be built around a common belief or lack of belief, atheist or humanist group. But other times it will be your physical community, your neighborhood, your family. There are lots of ways in which we put ourselves in human context. Religious community is one of them. It can be very effective, but there are lots of others.
Debbie, I wanted to ask you a question about something you wrote in the post that I referred to earlier that appeared on CNN.com, Why I Raise My Children Without God. I was interested in this. You said that as a blogger, I found that there are many other parents out there like me. We are creating the next generation of kids, and there is a wave of young agnostics, atheists, free thinkers, and humanists rising up through the ranks who will hopefully lower our nation's religious fever. Could you address that last part? Is that a concern of yours? And Dale, I'd like to ask you the same question, lowering our nation's religious fever.
Well, living in Texas, I personally think that we've had quite a bit of religious conservatism and bringing up these children who do not believe in creationism and are not so far to the right will help moderate things a bit. And hopefully we're all bringing up our children to be tolerant so that we can still embrace those that believe, but that we don't bring that into the educational system, that we can have good boundaries, and the parents who believe in God will still worship on Sunday or Saturday in their places of worship, but that we can have good boundaries and keep our religious views and our secular views separate.
And Dale?
The probably the best way to say this is that there is a social trend going on, and no matter what we do, this sort of inexorable trend toward a reduced religious fever, if that's the way you you want to put it, to a more progressive religious expression in the United States, it's inevitable. It's something that happened in Europe already over the course of just a couple of generations, dramatically faster than anyone expected, and the same things are clearly going on in the United States. It doesn't mean that religion is going away, but it's actually changing in its nature. It's changing in the way it's expressed, and I think it's a very positive change. Still, there are localities, there are places in the country and subsets of the culture in which that hasn't taken root yet, but I'm very optimistic about the direction we're going.
Mark in Baltimore, I'll take your call next. Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
Dan, I'm an atheist, and I don't believe that right or wrong has a religion. I also don't believe in Casper, fairy tales, or your God. It has nothing to do and can't change anything in anyone's life. You can't prove that, neither can I, but we can do science and believe in science. When all of you who are religiously inclined, whenever you have an ailment going on, you run to the doctors, the hospitals, and that's running to scientists. I just can't see how we can continue to teach that there's a fairy tale like God out there in the 21st century.
All right. Thank you for your comments. I want to read one more comment that came in from Robert that would actually lead us to a broader discussion that we don't have time for, but I'm just tempted to read it here. Robert says that with the very comments of your guests have only reinforced my own Quaker belief that it is only by looking within that a person can actually come to reasonable and meaningful conclusions regarding belief. And it is this firm belief in the self that ultimately leads me to reject atheism entirely, as it would prevent me from believing in myself. Maybe I should send you Robert's email address. You can invite him to one of the humanist meetings. It sounds like it'd be a great discussion. Anyway, I want to thank Deborah Mitchell and Dale McGowan for joining us today. Dale McGowan authored Parenting Beyond Belief, writes and blogs about this subject. And so does Deborah Mitchell. And she has a new book out called Growing Up Godless, A Parent's Guide to Raising Kids Without Religion. The publisher is Sterling Ethos. I want to thank you both for joining us today, Dale McGowan and Deborah Mitchell. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you, Dan.
Yeah,
I enjoyed the show.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone, who contributed with emails, comments on Facebook, phone calls. I'm sorry I didn't get to all the calls today, but please follow up with emails. I read emails on midday on follow-up shows when I have an opportunity. So don't be discouraged if you didn't get on the line. Send me a note, midday@wypr.org. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Thank you for listening.
Midday's senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer and director is Jonathan Ahrens. The associate producer, Michael Himowitz. Our interns are James Daly, Tom Cartaxo, and Michelle Richardson. Music produced by Jeff Truman in High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming available at wypr.org. Dan Rodrick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.